Linoleum Life,
a podcast of the cinema,
hosted by me, Dave White. I'm a film critic. I write for The Wrap, and also hosted by you. Your name is
Alonso Duraldi. I'm the film reviews. Was that too radio?
Whoa!
Sorry, coming in hot.
You're bowling me over,
Alonso Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap. I'm the co-host of the Who Shot You podcast on Maximum Fun and a co-host of What the Flick on the Young Turks Network.
You've ruined my day. You didn't ruin my day.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, okay. My day wasn't ruined, but you upended my day. And you know I don't like surprises at the last minute, but the weird thing that you did this morning was so very weird, because at 5:45 a.m., you sat up in bed, which immediately woke me up, and you got up and you stood in the room for a little bit, sort of looking for something, like maybe your bathrobe, but you couldn't find it, and then you walked out into the living room. Before you walked out in the living room, I said, "Hey," and you didn't answer because your earplugs were still in.
Yes.
And
because somebody snores.
Well, be that as it may, I would have assumed that you would have taken your earplugs out right upon standing up out of the bed. You did not. Then you walk out of the living room and I don't hear you walking around. I hear nothing. And I think, what's going on? So I get up and I walk out to the living room. And you are, again, just standing stock still in the living room. And I go, "Hey, Alonzo." No answer. It's like you're in the Blair Witch Project, standing in the corner waiting for the witch to get us both.
Of course, that's where your mind goes.
And I go, "Alonzo." And then I see you reach up to your ears, and I was like, "Oh, dummy, take your earplugs out so you can hear me." Then you tell me that you're calling in sick.
Yeah, because I barely slept last night because I didn't.
The flight screwed you up.
We were on a flight yesterday. I usually have this thing where I can roll up my hoodie just so to act as a neck pillow and sort of support me while I'm in that uncomfortable coach seat.
Yes,
but I didn't do it right, and
why did you do it wrong?
To annoy you.
Why did you do it like that?
I don't know.
Ain't you flat enough times to know how to behave in a plane with your neck?
At the time, I didn't notice how not working it was. But during the night, my neck was killing me.
Your neck? Your back?
My back. It gave me a headache. It made it impossible for me to sleep. I had pretty much insomnia all night.
Only your neck and your back?
No, nothing else.
Okay.
And so frankly, when I got up, I thought it was
Are you sure? Just your neck?
Positive. Just your back. My neck and my back.
Nothing else. Okay.
I thought it was like 2:30 in the morning or something. I thought it was the middle of the night because I had been so restless and not able to sleep. So I was surprised when you informed me that, no, this was your wake-up time. At which point I realized, oh, okay, well, there's no fixing this in time to get any kind of sleep to have a day today
right.
at Outfest, so I did call in sick.
How are you? I mean, okay, sick is the wrong word. You called in because you couldn't handle being, in the office in a chair and things and stuff today. That was several hours ago. How do you feel now?
I feel better. I took a hot shower. I've been like lying on the floor with my, shoulders on the hard floor.
Yes.
It's, I'm in better shape now.
So have you been moving around? Cause you got to move around to make that stuff.
Oh, I have not been moving.
Go around. Away. Well,
I had a lot of work to do that involved my laptop and sitting at it.
Okay.
Don't you get want excited. You want to buy me a standing desk don't with a treadmill, excited. You know.
Don't get excited. Everything's fine.
I'll do that.
Your neck, your back.
Yes, my neck and my back.
Will be fine. And it's all thanks to, listen, it was worth it though. Even though you ruined my day by being in here in the apartment. And it was also worth it because we went to South by Southwest for approximately 36 hours.
Just about, yeah.
And you got to be on the panel for Turner Classic Movies / Filmstruck.
Correct.
I got you guys, I got to tell you something. If you ever get a gig where you can be married to the person who gets treated like a VIP, that's the best gig. You don't want to be the person who's treated like a VIP because then they expect stuff of you. Like they think you, they expect you to get up on a panel and talk and be smart and not a doofus. But if you could just be married to that person, you get to go to places for free. You get to be in a fancy hotel with Maud Apatow. You get to be, you get free room service. And drivers. It was nice.
Yeah, it was a sweet deal.
I mean, coach is not great, but that was all my fault.
Yes, I could have had one beautiful first class ticket. But yes. I said, no, give me two in steerage so that I may bring my husband with me.
That's right.
On this trip.
That's right.
So that he may enjoy the glories of the Fairmont Hotel.
The Fairmont Austin Hotel.
Which they, like...
Is extremely tall and very blue.
They're still unwrapping the name off the outside because it's that new.
It's got new car smell. They pump gorgeous flowery fragrance through the AC. You walk into the lobby and you just... You're awaft on a cloud of beautiful floral scent. And then, hey, there's Maud Apatow. Also her parents, whoever they are.
Whatever.
But The look, nice firm mattress.
Yes.
Oh. Lilabo toiletries in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all know what Lilabo is? You should look that up because it's expensive. Free. All free. Room service. They bring you room service. No charge. Thanks, TCM and Filmstruck. The little condiment, little glass jars of condiments that you can just take.
There was not a condiment or a toiletry we left behind from that hotel.
No jams left behind. Three little jams, honey, maple syrup, mustard, ketchup, mayo in a little glass bottles. A variety of sugar packets. Such a lovely weekend. Why don't you talk about the actual panel that you were on?
The actual panel was about sort of the history of LGBT representation in cinema. And so it was me and because I hosted the lesbian and gay cinema section of Filmstruck last summer. I wrote introductions and introduced 13 films for that. Then it was Dave Karger, who did a series on TCM with author William J. Mann, talking about gays and lesbians who worked in the industry. You know, people like what the silent film star they were talking
name
about.
Name a couple.
William
Haynes.
William Haynes, yeah. You know, George Cukor, yeah. James Whale, people like that. Charlie Tabish, who is the head of programming for TCM, and yep. Then it was moderated by Jacqueline Stewart from the University of Chicago,
yep.
Who I adore. She was so nice and funny, and we had a great time hanging out.
Also, walks everywhere in heels. That's impressive. For any woman that does that, I look at that woman and I think, superhero. Like, how are you? What do you? You have a titanium spine? Like, how did you do that? Because I see women in heels walking badly or just giving up, like, sensibly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thinking, you know what? I'm not going to destroy my body. But then I see the women who do it. They just walk around in heels. And just like, yeah, yeah, whatever. This is what I do.
We also met Jacqueline's cousin, Rachel, who is an archivist at the University of Texas, and she apparently has curated an exhibit at the Carver Museum in Austin about activism from communities of color, which we were not in town long enough to see. But if you are in Austin and you can get to the Carver to see it, apparently it's great. So go check that out.
It was a nice panel. I liked it. You had about 55 people show up. I counted because I sit in the back.
Okay. Over 50 is good, I think. Because there's 10,000 things going on.
And there are 10,000 seats in that room.
During Sabbath. Yes, they put us in it. There was some real positive thinking in whoever put
there was
us
in room that for room. Like 300 people.
Because the room just kept going back. And I was like, oh, no, we're not filling this. But more than 50, I'm perfectly happy.
I met Dave Karger for the first time. Well, it was the second time. The first time was just at a screening. It was like, hey, hi, good to meet you.
Right.
He's real nice.
He's very nice.
He's a real nice dude.
He's also turned me on to HQ, which may be a thing that destroys my life, but we'll see.
The phone game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, y'all have that. Enjoy doing that, whatever it is.
I played at noon. I made it about 5 or 6 questions in. Yeah.
And then
if you sign up for HQ, please list that you were referenced by A. Duralde, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E, and then I get extra lives.
It's an app.
Yeah.
It's a phone app game, and if you sign up and you say that A. Duralde sent you, he gets extra lives?
Yes.
I don't understand what that means.
Basically means that if I miss a question, I can play an extra life and keep going. Because here's how this thing works. It's a twice daily trivia game that happens live. It's like at noon and 6 Pacific time. So,
right.
You know, figure that out for wherever on the globe you are.
Uh-huh.
They ask you 12 multiple choice questions. They start out ridiculously easy and get harder and harder as it goes along. If you make it through all 12 questions, you and however many other people also made it all the way through, split a pot, usually of about $2,500. So like when I played yesterday, you know, enough people won that it was like $3 and something cents per person.
Yeah.
Today it was closer to like $20 a person.
Did you win the $3?
I did not. I have not won yet.
How do you get the money? Where does the money go?
They PayPal it to you, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah. So, they, you know, this is clearly a thing that's going to be bigger and they're going to figure out how to monetize it and it'll start having ads or whatever. But at the moment, it does not. And so it's just a twice daily trivia game and it's really fun. And
if you have them send it to your Linoleum Cast PayPal account, though, that's taxable income.
No, it'll come to my personal one.
But you have a personal PayPal?
I have a personal email address, so yes.
I didn't realize that you had a personal PayPal. We've been keeping this secret from me.
No, that's the one that I had it before Linoleum Life existed, and B, I generally only use it to buy you Christmas presents.
Oh, really? Okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Keep using it then.
It is.
Keep using it then. That's what you should be doing.
I will.
And then I left my laptop bag in the conference room.
Yes.
And then I ran all over Austin without a care in the world, thinking, oh, this is fine. I feel light and breezy.
So unencumbered.
Went to dinner with friends, and it was like, oh, no. Hop of that lift, get back downtown. Run into the Westin Hotel. All the doors are locked. Begging people, you're going to help me. My bag. Things in my bag. You know what was in my bag?
Everything.
My car keys.
Yes.
All right. All my Patreon records.
Mm-hmm.
Literally every file card that I had.
Another
don't
reason.
Talk to me okay, about fine. It. Don't. Do not step to me about this. Also, my medium-sized black book in which I do our monthly budgets.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all our passwords, all our bank words. You name a thing that someone could use to steal every
well. Then maybe
penny
you
that
be
we
talking
have
talking about it on this podcast.
Well, what someone
now
what,
someone's going to jump you and they're going to take
yes,
that book.
Yes, one of the listeners is going to jump me and take the book out of my hand so they can go steal our PIN numbers. Oh, we're going to get to the movies, I promise, in just a second. But
I didn't see anything at South by Southwest, although I did have a chance to catch beforehand Yen Tan's new film 1985, which we'll talk about more when it actually opens, but just suffice to say, it is gorgeous. It is a period piece about a gay man going home for Christmas, and it's probably going to be his last Christmas, and it's 1985, so you can figure out what that means. And it stars Corey Michael Smith from Gotham and Carol, as well as Virginia Madsen and Michael Chiklis.
Are you going to let me finish my...
Yes, go on.
...bag rescue story?
Oh, there's more. Sorry.
Well, we found it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to leave everyone hanging.
We found it. And then the guy who unlocked the doors for me goes, now you can go home and change your pants. And I was like, oh, you'd have no idea how true you are right now. I was having a silent panic attack. The friends that I was with, they said, we've never seen this happen to you. I was like, you should come live in our apartment because it happens about once a week. I was going to
say, they don't know you like I do.
But then, you know, everything was okay again.
Yes.
Speaking of Patreon records, I have one bit of business to attend to. Mm-hmm. If you are a Patreon subscriber, I need your attention. At the end of last year, things got weird for me, and I became incredibly disorganized. I'm not going to go into all the details, but suffice it to say that life overwhelmed me, and I got... things all wrongly combobulated. And it wound up being a situation where some of y'all got your 2017 Linoleum Knife Patreon prizes, and some of y'all did not. If you did not, will you please do me the favor of emailing me at dlelandwhite1964 dlelandwhite1964@gmail.com, because I am in the process of fixing that error. It was a big error. All my fault. I was having a bad time of it. And that's how these things sometimes happen when you are having a bad time of it. You can help me help you because you deserve all the things. Also, if you're a former Patreon person, let's say you unsubscribed for whatever reason, and you never got your stuff, also please email me, because I don't need to let you fall through the crack either. You especially deserve the prizes that you earned by being a Patreon subscriber during the time that you were a subscriber.
And hey, if you're not a Patreon subscriber, Dave finally has his act together. So join now. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Get extra content and fabulous prizes.
In my defense, my act was fairly together until November, December of last year.
But now you are totally on it.
I'm sure.
So if you're a new member, you won't need to hear this rap later on, because you'll just get your stuff when you're...
Well, you never know. I mean, this could become cyclical.
Okay, let's maybe not tell that to people. Let's maybe keep that under our hat. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. We'll take good care of you, honest.
I'm generally reliable. I just... Things were... Yeah. I spun out, man. I hit an oil slick in life.
If you sign up at the $4 and $7 level, you're just getting content, and so you'll get that automatically.
This is all irrelevant to
so
you.
So no matter how Dave goes off the skids, you'll still get everything you have coming to you.
I just felt that it was necessary to explain this on Linoleum Knife rather than simply the Patreon subscription content, because some people were subscribers and that are now not subscribers.
Okay.
And so they may need to hear this message as well. You dig?
I dig.
All right.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Sure. We would love to have you.
We would.
Yeah. We got some movies to review.
We do.
The first one is A Wrinkle in Time. I'm going to tell you all about it. There's a young girl. Her name is Meg, played by Storm Reid. Her parents are Gugu and Bathara and Chris Pine. They're scientists. They're those metaphysical kind of scientists you sometimes hear about, where they talk about, you know, transcending time and space, and all my calculations say that we can...
Tesseract.
We can tesseract. I don't even know what a tesseract is, but we can, you know, transport ourselves through time and space, and connect
horizons.
Connect to the universe and all of its many entrails and stuff. And so
they speak in TED Talk.
Yeah. Dad disappears one day and then is gone for 4 years. So the little brother that they adopted before the disappearance, he's now 6. Meg is now like 10, 11, whatever. And she is understandably depressed. She is also a highly scientific child herself. And what to their wondering eyes do appear but Space Oprah. Space Oprah comes down from the pink wisdom clouds.
Opera.
With Reese Witherspoon and Mindy Kaling on each arm. They three are also, the other two people are also from space. Mindy Kaling is Mrs. Who. She speaks in literary quotations. Reese Witherspoon is Mrs. What's-It, who I can't figure out what her deal is.
She's a little too perky for her own.
She's very much like Reese Witherspoon. Imagine if Reese Witherspoon were an actual goddess and tried to run your life.
I think Christy Lemire said that she was like intergalactic Tracy Flick.
Perfect. And Oprah is Mrs. Witch. And every word out of her mouth is something that you could actually have heard spoken on the Oprah Winfrey Show
right.
at any time during the course of its many-year run. Because all the things that Oprah says to Meg are, the universe will hear your light intentions and the power of your mind and the love of your being and the whatevers of whatever. Like, it's super cosmic.
The Ramalama of the ding-dong.
But she's mesmerizing.
You know what?
I love Oprah in this movie because she is so calm and so caring and so loving and so, you don't know what the hell she's talking about, but it doesn't matter because it feels really good.
Actual Oprah tends to get on my nerves.
Space Oprah.
Space Oprah.
You're into her.
Is very reassuring.
So they go off on an adventure into space. They meet Zach Galifianakis. He also has weird hair. Like, every person in the movie, except for the kids, look like they've got something on their head that you would put on a very French fancy pastry. Also, they're wearing sparkly tunics and whatnot.
Joining the main two kids, by the way, are the cute boy who likes Meg a lot.
Levi Miller.
Played by Levi Miller.
And he plays the cute boy. Like, that's all he does. He's nice, though.
He's basically playing, will be in almost any other movie, the girl.
They meet Michael Pena. He's one of the bad guys in The Bad Place. And during the course of their adventure, the little boy, the little brother, his character name is
Charles Wallace.
He gets a little bit turned to the dark side, but, you know, it's all, you know, rescue. I got to give a little bit of a nod to this kid. His name is Derek McCabe. Yes. He's new.
Yeah. Apparently they had like a worldwide search and then they found him in Burbank.
Was the search specifically for find the sassiest little boy you could get? Because this kid, I don't know where he's going in life, but he's got a, there is, obviously this is dialogue that he was,
right,
you know, that was written for him, but he has a Dakota Fanning quality to him in where.
An eerie sense of adultness.
Remember when she was 6 and she was in that terrible movie with Sean Penn?
I am Sam.
Okay, so she's 6 years old. She's in that terrible movie, but the whole time you're watching I Am Sam, you're thinking, who is this adult in the tiny child
How
body?
How did they shrink Gina Rowlands down to play this role?
What's going on with this kid? Why is this child already grown? That's how I feel about this little 6-year-old boy. He carries himself like he's already ready to, like he's 2 steps away from being Miranda Priestley. It's like he could dismiss you and you would say, Okay, and you'd leave the room.
I was kind of like that at that age.
Well then. Derek McCabe, you're going to be on a TCM panel one day. Lucky, lucky you. You have a film as a, you have a career as a film critic ahead of you.
I'm sure he'll do better than me.
You and your little sass mouth.
He'll make more of it than I do.
Very appealing kid, like kind of upstages Storm Reid often.
True. It's kind of written. It's kind of written that way.
It is. It is. It is. But she's very appealing.
She is great.
So,
and I'm a big Levi Miller fan, going back to the terrible Pan and the very good Better Watch Out.
Yeah, no, he's a fine young child actor himself.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with this movie?
That's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Here was my takeaway with it. I loved looking at it. I loved the spectacle of it. I loved the places they go and the things they find
there. There are some really beautiful visual things going on here. Yeah.
But at the same time, it feels like...
And some kind of corny, hokey, never-ending story-looking kind of things, too.
Right. Well, at the premiere, Ava DuVernay specifically cited the never-ending story.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, it's a movie that she watched a lot as a kid. So those are intentional shout-outs.
Fully understandable stuff, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something about that when it's over, it's sort of like, oh... That's it?
Oh, wait, yeah.
It feels like
felt very rushed.
It feels like they're setting up this big sort of epic thing, and then they're done.
Yeah.
it's sort of like if somebody spent, it's like that old joke where like, they spend like 10 minutes giving you instructions, and they're like, okay, here, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the feeling.
You're like, wait, but I don't think I'm ready for it to be
done yet. Isn't there another act in here
somewhere? I'm glad it was like an hour, 45 minutes, but, I felt like the pacing of it was weird because you really do think that by the time it gets to the ending that they're just gearing up for the big whatever.
Yeah. It's like when you...
And then the big whatever is you only ever needed to love and believe in yourself. You know, like
I mean, it's like, you know, the Phantom Tollbooth, you know, the book and to an extent the movie, which doesn't entirely work, but I kind of have a soft spot for it because it's Chuck Jones. Like, the kid goes on all these big adventures and goes to all these places and accomplishes all this stuff that really calls on him to sort of call upon his inner resources and be smart and be brave and all these things. And then it's not until the very end that you realize, oh, all of this elapsed in the course of an afternoon, even though it feels like he went on this giant epic journey. And this one feels like a giant epic journey that is over in the course of an afternoon.
Yes.
You know, and so that's sort of weird. But I haven't read the book in a long time, so I don't know if the book has that same thing.
I think this film is more good than bad.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's a movie that I recommend with, you know, acknowledging that it has flaws.
I haven't read anyone else's review, but in the air, because you can't avoid the air.
Yes.
But the air is filled with the voices of, this sucks.
Right.
And so I'm going to have to go, after we finish doing this podcast, I'm going to have to go read some of those opinions more in depth. But you know, I don't believe that is the case. It was not the case with me.
I have a soft spot for these sort of visually extravagant movies that don't quite work. Like, I dig Valerian on a certain level.
Yes.
I like Jupiter Ascending quite a bit.
Yes.
So sometimes, like, you know, for me, this is like, okay, so this is a movie for six-year-olds who trip balls.
I'm glad you said that because more six-year-olds should trip balls. And it's a kid. It's a kid movie.
It is a kid movie.
It is a children's film.
Yeah.
And that's not a disparaging comment, but very often now what we have in multiplexes are what are essentially children's films that are also geared toward adults.
Like all the Marvel movies.
Like all the superhero movies.
Yeah.
This is a children's film that is a children's film.
Yeah.
You're, as an adult, you're going to watch it and go, okay, well, I already learned all these life lessons. You know, I already know that I'm supposed to believe in myself. Like, I'm also supposed to, you know, go do the homework. But the kid in this movie has already done her homework.
Right.
She just didn't believe it herself.
And it's also, it's written by the woman who wrote Frozen. And it's the kind of thing where if this were a cartoon, people would be more amenable to the idea of it being a children's film that adults can enjoy. You're right. Now, because so much of adult content has become like genre stuff that would have in a previous age been thought of as kid stuff.
Yes.
That, you know, because it isn't more adult facing, that that's a flaw.
No, it is not adult facing.
Yeah.
It is a movie that adults who take children with them can enjoy.
Yeah.
And, but not probably get much out of it other than, oh, that was pretty.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, ooh, space opera. But the, the happening in this film's future is the children who watch it now.
Absolutely.
Who really like it, they're going to really like it. And they will take it with them.
I said that exact thing in my review.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, okay, well.
That you did not read.
So. We're so great together.
I would rather kids take something like this into adulthood than Space Jam.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. And the Sade song is real nice.
It's very nice.
You got tweeted at this week.
Yes.
By a person who was questioning whether or not your mixed to positive review was based on your personal, you know, affection for Ms. DuVernay, who you kind of know.
Ish. We have a passing acquaintance. Like, I can say hello to her at a function and she'll remember who I am.
All I know.
But I don't, we've never hung out. I don't know her.
My only interaction with her was back in the days when she was a publicist.
Right.
And that was just an always email.
We are not the kind of friendly where I would feel like, oh, I can't review your movies.
Oh, anymore. Hey, Ava. Yeah. Like, yeah, you wouldn't. Yeah. No, we have friends whose movies and projects that we can't really review.
Yes.
Because they're friends.
Yeah.
But she's not, y'all ain't that close.
If we were friends, I would try and get her to come on the podcast. We're not, trust me.
And there was a funny Onion piece that yes. went around. Saying
San Francisco film critic assures readers in his negative Wrinkle in Time review that he is very much pro diversity.
Yeah, I'm glad that you got that tweeted at you because I think it's something that needs to be discussed frequently. To write any kind of cultural criticism, you are invariably bringing your subjective experiences to it.
Yes. Or bias, as angry people on Twitter like to say.
You are always bringing your bias to it. That is an accusation that is thrown out in anger, but it is a true thing that no matter what you are writing about.
Yeah, we're not, this isn't news. This is opinion.
You come to it with bias. And your bias as a film critic is a cinematic one. It's not a personal one.
Right, an aesthetic one.
Yeah, it's an aesthetic one. It's one where you liked Jupiter Ascending, and you liked Valerian, and you liked, any number of... You liked The Neverending Story. You know what I mean?
I've actually never seen The Neverending Story.
I've seen it many times because I worked in a movie theater the summer it came out.
Ah, yeah. Me too, but it didn't play ours.
Yeah. And so... To be in this moment where, liking or disliking something as a critic is seen as some greater measure is tough.
Well, I know, for example, there are going to be people who are going to assume that our review of Love, Simon is to be taken with a grain of salt because as gay guys, how could we possibly be objective about it? Or,
oh, just you watch.
How could we not go in, having, with our minds made up beforehand?
You'll see.
Yeah.
Or rather, you'll hear.
There was a thing where when Black Panther was about to open.
Right.
There were sort of voices in the internet
Right.
who had immediately assumed, oh, well, of course, all the SJW critics are going to like this
Right.
because they
Right.
can't be
You
against it,
can't
blah, blah, blah.
say it's aesthetically, a piece of crap.
We have to love this movie. And then, of course, everyone loved Black Panther, and
Right.
so that fell away. And so I think maybe now with Wrinkle in Time, because the response was mixed, the accusation for people who say they like it is, oh, well,
Here's another thing to consider. A film like A Wrinkle in Time, with its cast and with its filmmaker, and a film like Love, Simon, with its subject matter and its filmmaker, are treated like special little golden litmus tests
Oh, constantly.
that have to pass all sorts of, hurdles
Yeah.
to be simply considered a movie.
And not just like a social event,
Yeah, well,
a very special
not
episode.
even a social event or a very special episode, but something that is held to a tougher standard of its very existence is held to a tougher standard. There was just an article this past week in Time on their website. Do teenagers really need Love, Simon? I think that was the title. And I was like,
Yes.
Hey, Time Magazine, why don't you go F yourself? Because
Did teenagers need every day?
did anyone ever need every single heterosexual romantic comedy that came down the pike? No one ever asks, do we really need these? No one says, do straight people need any more?
Fast and Furious movies.
Well, no, well, listen, we all need
We
more
all need
Fast and
those.
Furious movies.
I'm just was pulling that out of a hat.
Yeah. No, but specifically the rom-com. Like,
Yes.
how many do y'all need, straight people? Really, when will it ever be enough?
Do we need another Judd Apatow movie?
Defend
Do we need
yourselves.
another Nancy Myers movie?
Please defend your need for these
Oy.
things. And so when you have a film like Love, Simon, or Wrinkle in Time, where everyone's got, not everyone, but there are people out in the world who have their arms crossed, like, we'll just see about this. Was this necessary
Who
after
said
all?
you could sit at the table?
Right. And so I
Will you
that's a
please turn off your phone? It's vibrating on the
Oh,
table.
it is vibrating on the table,
Yes.
and it's from an unknown number.
Boo.
I'm not answering that.
Well,
Also, if it's a number I know, I'm not answering
I'm
that.
podcasting right now.
The
Scott Mendelson had a great thing on Forbes where he was
Yeah.
talking about how the opening weekend of Wrinkle in Time and how it was good but not great and maybe a little
Right.
under blah blah blah. But he said at the end, he goes, the real test here isn't is this movie going to be a big hit worldwide. The real test is if it isn't, does Ava DuVernay get to make another movie anyway, the way that Guy Ritchie got hired to direct Aladdin as King Arthur was imploding.
Right.
Like, white guys get this seemingly endless row of chances
Right.
to flop before on the hopes that they're going to make a hit again.
Yeah.
Whereas, there are so many female filmmakers. We were talking about this at dinner, actually, after the panel with the TCM folks. A lot of female filmmakers who made one movie because that one movie didn't set the world on fire, and then it was like, all right, sorry, moving
You
on.
had your turn.
You had your turn, exactly.
So yeah, there are a lot of issues involved. I mean, obviously we just went from what mean what does a critic have to bring to the review, and then on to the subject of do these films get to
Are they
exist,
allowed to, and are they allowed to
and are
fail?
they allowed to fail? This is just the sort of bracing commentary that you'll hear each week on this show.
The inability to remain on any one subject.
Yeah. Just flit from thing to thing.
Like the honeybee.
Anyway, I'm glad that was tweeted at you because it's something that we have to repeat, I think, over and over again, as critics. We have to talk about what we bring with us
Yeah.
to criticism and what criticism is supposed to do. I know earlier this week, Matt Seitz tweeted something about just because I write a review doesn't mean
I'm trying to make you agree
I'm
with
trying to
me.
make you agree with me, which is kind of true, and also sometimes for me, kind of not, because not that I want to get into an argument with anybody about anything, because I just won't. You can come at me all day with telling me how wrong I am, and we're not going to have a conversation about it. We're not going to have a conversation on that level. We can talk about the film, but we're not going to try to convince each other
the other is wrong.
That the other is wrong. You know, the only time I'm going to try to convince you of anything is in the form of advocacy.
Yeah.
You know, I really...
You don't think you want to see this, but you do.
I really want you to hunt down Elmar Lamar.
Right.
This teeny tiny little experimental ethnographic documentary that I just saw a couple weeks ago. You know, I'm not going to tell you if you see it and you didn't like it that you're wrong, but if you haven't seen it, I want you to go find it. That's it for me.
And I also, like, I don't believe in sort of rooting for people, whether it's, you know, stars or directors or whatever. Like,
no.
If they let you down, you call them on it. I mean, I will soon be writing a review of a film from a director whom I've pretty much always liked, but I'm not so crazy about the new one.
I don't know what film that is, and
I'll tell you later.
Well, you can tell me what that is after the show is over, but... It's such an air of mystery now.
Ooh. We'll get to it soon enough.
Yeah. What's the other?
The Hurricane Heist.
Oh, God. Oh, God, you guys. Y'all. All right, tell them. Tell them.
Okay. So, there's a hurricane. It's the storm of the century, according to...
And the criminals are going to steal it.
According to PhD meteorologist Toby Kebbell, who... You know how we always talk about how British actors are coming over here with their perfect American accents and stealing all our jobs?
Ha-ha!
Toby
Not this time.
Toby Kebbell. Who I have liked in things. Like, I think his Masala in the otherwise fairly unremarkable new Ben-Hur was better than, you know, Stephen Boyd's.
Sure.
His southern accent in this movie, I believe I said in my review, is so thick you could spread it on a Cracker Barrel biscuit.
Ain't nothing cuter than a fat country baby eating peaches on a hardwood floor. Yeah.
He really mangles the word underestimating a couple of times, which is really hilarious.
It's bonkers.
So he's driving around in his, like, impregnable weather truck, trying to convince the people at the National Weather Service that they need to listen to his gut, that this is going to be, you know, just the worst hurricane ever.
The hurricane of all time.
Yes. So he winds up visiting his boozy brother, who was a football star, who then went to Afghanistan and now just, like, drinks a lot, who's played by Ryan Kwanten, who has... has a somewhat better bad southern accent because he was on True Blood for a long time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Maggie Grace, who is an ATF agent who used to be in the FBI until she did something that got somebody killed, but we're never really told what exactly.
Right.
Is commandeering a convoy of trucks with old money that's going to this treasury base to be destroyed. Well, it turns out that there's a big plot to rob the treasury of $600 million worth of old 20s and 50s, and they're all going to do it under the cover of the hurricane. And this involves some mostly faceless henchmen, except for this one woman played by, what's her name again? Something Bologna?
One moment, please. I'm just pulling her up. Melissa Bologna.
Melissa Bologna.
We are your new biggest fans. She is to acting Alan Loeb is to writing.
Yeah.
And I'm just basing this on one performance. She may be a really good actress. We don't know.
That's true. Maybe this wasn't the right vehicle for her.
She has a good handful of credits here. So I'm willing to go look at other things that she's been in. But... oh my God.
The line readings are doozies, but what really steals the show here is she gets into the facility by pretending to be like a computer technician and repair person, despite the fact that she is wearing a teal off-the-shoulder mini dress with her hair up and high heels, and later in the film, she has a gun that is in a matching teal.
She is dressed for the club.
At noon.
And the little lady gun that she has is the same color as her dress.
Has highlights.
It is magnificent.
So there's like all this sort of CG clouds going around, and occasionally the clouds look like a
Oh,
skull.
no, they don't look like a skull. They form an actual
They form a
skull.
skull
Yeah.
because Toby Kebbell lost. You know, here's your backstory. Toby Kebbell lost his daddy in a twister, and you know, what Maggie Grace was a Fed until she got somebody killed.
The
Like
end.
that's the end. That's all we
Yeah.
got.
Sorry, the end of character development is
Exactly,
what you
yeah.
should
And the
say.
movie
Yeah.
just keeps trudging along until we finally get a big 18-wheeler chase with a hurricane behind them. And you know how part of the one of the few things wrong with Black Panther is occasionally it's just two masked costume figures fighting, and you can tell that you're just looking at two cartoons.
Yeah.
The trucks are
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
cartoons. Yeah, Hurricane Heist. It's terrible. You should see it.
I don't think you're doing it justice.
Oh, please.
What I really loved was your review, the headline, "This is stupid with a chance of bonkers."
I think it was backwards, but yes. I think it was bonkers with a chance of
No,
stupid. Oh, was it stupid with a chance?
stupid
Okay.
with a chance of bonkers.
Okay.
I remember the greats.
Thank you.
And each distinct little thing that's wrong with this movie on its own wouldn't be enough.
But they pile up.
But they do pile up, and they swirl around like a hurricane. They really do, and so that with each passing moment, you're thinking, "What? Oh my God, what's
Are
happening?
we doing this now?
Who's? What did they just say? How did they just say it?
Oh yeah, basically the movie boils down to
How are they not being eaten by the hurricane right now with the on the tethers?" The tether from the rope that's
In the
like
mall,
in the they're in the mall, they get sucked out of the ceiling
the
of the mall,
skylight.
and the meteorologist is trying to control the hurricane with special physics forces from inside the mall.
The movie has like basically relies upon the notion that the good guys know how to manipulate the hurricane in a way that will take the bad guys out without themselves they themselves getting hurt.
Yes.
Which you could maybe pull off in a movie that was less redonk, but it is not, and so it doesn't.
I really, really, really want everyone to go see it. It is my favorite piece of crap so far of 2018.
Yeah, we had a very good time watching
Yeah, we paid tickets. We paid ticket price too, so no one can ever accuse us of dilettantism.
That's right. Because they didn't show it to the press.
They
I
did
wonder
not.
why.
No.
From the director of Your Mother's Cookies,
Oh, really?
The Boy Next Door,
The
yes,
boy next
Rob
door, Rob
Cohen.
Cohen, who directed.
Triple X and The Fast and the Furious and Alex Cross.
Okay. All right. If you've been listening to Linoleum Knife for the past 7.5 years, you know one very specific thing about me. I mean, you know more than one specific thing about me, but you know that I'm somewhat nervous about home invasions. I'm not a fan of them.
You never signed up for
I
one.
don't want one to happen to me. The movie The Strangers really did me in.
In 2008.
Yeah. That first one unsettled me so much, and I don't even think it's a very good movie, that I wound up writing an entire article about it for Fangoria in
Right.
one of their
Roading?
last. Did I say writing?
Yes. Yes. If before Fangoria went bankrupt and then coming back.
I wound up writing a piece for it in Fangoria before they died the first time. I guess
Were
they're,
resurrected.
yeah. There is a bleak quality to the 2008 film. That is my favorite kind of horror movie. Because I think you should leave a horror movie feeling horrible.
Right.
I don't think that you should leave a horror movie feeling great about how the killers got theirs at the end when the final girl gets them. I think everyone should be killed. And that the killers should get away with it so that when you leave that theater, you go home, you're scared for the rest of your life that those killers are still out there in your imagination. You know, the movie didn't do them in.
And by you, you mean you.
I mean me. It's like how I really thought the ending of The First Human Centipede was perhaps the most horrifying, dreadful thing that I'd ever seen. Because the unthinkable takes place.
All right. Well, Rosemary's Baby, I think, of sort of the classic.
Same
example.
Way.
Yeah. There's no like.
I just was given to hyperbole. Not that I have ever seen, but at least that year, that was one of my favorite horror films because, the way it ends, it's terrifying. So okay. That's how The First Strangers ends. You know, they just drive off. Their work accomplished.
You were home.
Yeah. This one.
The Strangers, colon,
pray at night.
P-R-E-Y.
Takes you to a different location. So we are to understand that The Strangers...
never follow a horror movie to a second location.
Travel, I guess.
Well, they have a truck.
They do have a truck, and it's the same truck.
Now, has
we don't know if they've aged because they wear those masks all the time.
Has 10 years lapsed in the Strangers universe?
We don't know. They don't talk about that.
I see.
But you have a family, Christina Hendricks, Martin Henderson of Torque.
Yes, of Torque. I'm sure that's how he likes to be introduced.
He should be proud. Torque is brilliant. Martin Henderson. Bailey Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Remember her?
From Just Go With It?
Bridge to Terabithia.
Ah.
Remember that?
Yep.
That's another one. When she was 6, 7 years old, you're thinking about her, thinking, ooh, another Dakota Fanning type with this very, very unsettling adult qualities.
Did you know that John Stockwell, who wrote the adaptation of Bridge to Terabithia, also co-adapted A Wrinkle in Time?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. And a young man named Lewis Pullman that I don't really know very well. They are in a deserted mobile home park.
Okay, that already I'm afraid of that.
They don't mean to be in a deserted mobile home park, but that's where they are. And there are valid reasons why they are there. But then there are not valid reasons why they keep walking into mobile homes that have no lights. So this film is set up like a very traditional slasher film. You know, grown-up people, and I include teenagers in the word grown-up here, behaving as stupidly as a person could be. Behaving in ways that would suggest that they themselves live in a universe where there are no horror films.
Right.
Because they do all the wrong things. Hello? Is someone there? Well, let's think. You're in a pitch dark trailer where the lights aren't on and the phone's been cut. What do you think is behind that door? Perhaps the chopped up corpses of the people they killed before you. And then maybe one of them still waiting for another victim to show up. That might be what's behind that door.
You think?
So that takes me out. Like, I want a horror movie to be smarter
right.
than the audience that always goes to see horror movies. And this one, I don't think it is. What it is, though, is full of references to other horror movies.
Oh.
There is a... So they get that right, but they don't... They give you credit for maybe catching those references, but not credit for actually having seen other horror movies where people behave badly and stupidly and get themselves killed.
Right. So this is a movie designed for people who've seen other horror films, but not for people who've seen enough other horror films
to care,
know that this is not how you should behave in a horror film.
To care that this one maybe could have been...
Better.
Cleverer. Like, there's a very nice Texas Chainsaw Massacre bit in the last act that I that I liked. And there are a lot of references to John Carpenter. Also, I liked. There are some genuinely frightening jump moments that I didn't see coming. There are at least two that got me like, blah! Like I didn't know that was going to happen.
Whoa. And I'm, you're the king of the jump scare.
I'm good at seeing those
jump
coming.
Jump scare detection.
Yeah, I am good at seeing those coming. And there were a couple that I didn't see coming. I think my favorite thing about this film was that I went with Gary Cotti. And that boy, sorry, that grown man who's nearly 40.
Is a jumper.
He's a jumper and a screamer. Like, to the point where the people next to us were like, amused by him.
Like, maybe he can get a job.
He levitated out of his chair a couple times.
He can get a job as a paid ringer at these critic screenings where they recruit regular folks to show us how scary it is.
I also did not appreciate the song score, the music cues that they used. A lot of 80s power ballads taking place during murders.
Yeah.
Which I find, first of all, it's tired.
Yeah.
That ironic juxtaposition of things, yeah. I'm not into it.
Like, i.e. any use of John Denver in a 2017 movie.
Right. Yes. So, you know, it moves like a horror movie. It acts like a horror movie. It sounds like a horror movie. It's not the worst horror movie. If you like The Strangers, you'll probably want to go see this just to check it out and know what happens.
Right. But this isn't going to haunt your dreams the way the first...
No, I do believe that this film has inoculated me.
Oh, yay! I hope so.
Toward these three specific killers.
Okay.
I'm still on high alert for all other home invaders.
Including Richard Ramirez, who is dead.
Including Richard Ramirez, who is dead. Because he's the very most terrifying of them all. Because he was real. And he operated here in our otherwise beautiful city.
Sunny Southern California.
So I would call this mixed to negative. How's that?
Okay.
Your Wrinkle in Time was mixed to positive. Yeah, I can't recommend it. But it's not the worst.
Okay.
I know it's getting pretty good reviews from a lot of people.
Really?
Yeah, I don't see what they see here. I just, you know, it wasn't scary. Other than those two jump scares that took me by surprise, I wasn't afraid. You know, there are a couple good shots that mimic things that happened in the first Strangers. You know, that silent emergence of a killer.
A figure.
Yeah. But they've already done that. They blew that in the trailer for the first film. that scene in the first movie where Liv Tyler is standing in the dining room of the home that they're in and emerging very slowly out of the dark in the corner of the room is Sackface, and she doesn't see him. And then he goes back into the darkness. Horrifying. Horrifying. All those wide shots where it's quiet and then suddenly you see in the distance the killer. You know. And for me personally, that's the scariest moment of the first film and the most effective copycat moment of this film, just because of that the thing I wrote about in the Fangoria article that really happened in my childhood, the man with the white shirt.
Right.
Briefly, I know some of y'all have already heard the story or read the Fangoria article, but when I was 6 years old, a man in a white shirt appeared in our backyard in my childhood home.
From out of the woods.
And then when my brother saw him and yelled out the dining room window, he ran back into the woods. And we didn't know who it was. And I didn't know who it was until I was an adult. It turned out to be a neighbor who was a peeping Tom. Yeah. But no one told me that. And all the adults in the neighborhood found out about it later, like 6 months later. And they didn't tell any of the kids, just sort of like, oh, the spooky man. Like, it became a thing. You want the man in the white shirt to come back? Like, that becomes the threat. Like, you better behave.
It became your, what's the... There was a... The thing, like, in the Northeast, and they made a documentary about it. It's something like horsey or something that ends in a Y. It was the Slender Man of the 70s. It was a...
I don't remember what you're talking about.
One of those urban legend, you know, like sack face killer.
Banksy.
Yeah, Banksy, exactly. Banksy is going to come.
And Cropsy?
Cropsy.
Cropsy.
Thank you.
Cropsy.
Banksy's going to spray paint your face on the side of a building in a damning satire of late stage capitalism. Beware.
So, are those the movies?
Those are the movies. You want to do some DVD picks?
Yeah. Angst.
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 Was ist Angst?
The Austrian serial killer movie from 1983.
Okay.
It's terrifying. And, you know, one of the early 80s, you know, examples of this genre. It was never released in the United States. Hmm. Back when CineFamily was still in Los Angeles, they showed it one night. I went to see it, and I was... It is so incredibly creepy, and so much of it takes place in broad daylight, which is another unsettling, you know, aspect of it. It's just about this guy who just has urge to kill, and he's got face. The camera is all up in his face, and his face is always like contorted, you know. It's a freaky movie.
Okay.
Check it out. Well,
on the other end of the humanism spectrum, my favorite film of 2017 is now out on Blu-ray. Agnes Varda and JR's Faces Places, which was nominated for Best Documentary. Sadly, did not win. It was beaten out by Icarus, but still a great movie. Just we've talked about it on the show. You've heard me discuss it in various contexts, but it's just this beautiful movie about... two artists roaming the French countryside and turning people's lives into art and helping them tell their stories. And it's just gorgeous and full of life and beautiful. And Agnes Varda is, I think, everyone's role model for how to be in your 80s. And still active and interesting and interested and, you know, creative. I cannot recommend this movie enough. It is just perfection.
It's so good and so beautiful and so full of life.
Yeah.
And kindness.
Mm-hmm.
All of the things that are missing in the film. Angst.
So there's your double feature. Yes. Angst and Faces Places are DVD picks this week. We have letters.
We do. And here they are. Ba-da-ba-ba.
I don't actually remember the dating game music, but
we have a 5-star review.
Thank you.
On
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. I followed David Alonso to Linoleum Knife from Pop Rocket.
Oh, woo-hoo! Yay.
I'm always shocked when that kind of thing happens. I'm like, oh, someone paid attention on Pop Rocket to me. Like, why would you do that?
To the guest.
I mean, because think about it. All right, you've got the effervescent and charming Winter.
Mm-hmm.
And smarter than everyone, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
And Guy, who is just a force of, like, witty, charming nature.
Right.
And every time I've been on Pop Rocket...
And you haven't met the wonderful...
I still haven't met Margaret.
Fascinating and winsome Margaret.
Here's the stupidest thing of all for me in all of this is that, you know, before they ever knew who I was, it was my favorite podcast. And so now I know 3 of the 4 of them. But the only reason that I ever got on that show is because one of them is always missing. And so it's always been Margaret.
Yeah.
And so I've never met her. I don't know her. But... the fact that I ever got to go on that show, that they ever asked me back for any reason, I jokingly said that I'm the 4th favorite substitute teacher as a replacement, and I still truly believe that. But I don't think of it as a slam because
you're on the list.
I got to be on Pop Rocket, y'all. Guess who didn't get to be on Pop Rocket? Most of you.
No, I had to. I mean, we were both Pop Rocket fans before we were ever asked to be on it. And I always had a suspicion in the back of my mind, like, I'll never be cool enough to be on this show. I can't hold my weight with these people. And I guess I
can. It turns out you almost can.
I guess.
And I almost hold as much weight as you do.
So we can fake it
except,
really well.
Except with, in terms of actual weight, where I am fatter than everyone.
Thank you.
So, and thank you, Pop Rocket. And thank you for anyone who followed us from Pop Rocket to here.
Including who wrote this review?
Who wrote this review? KWS in WA.
Okay. In Washington, I guess.
The movie reviews are thoughtful and thorough. I enjoy Alonzo's polite evisceration of some of the duds and Dave's not-so-polite dissection. I also appreciate that they will recommend interaction with the film, which is a range from don't bother going to wait for streaming to absolutely buy a ticket right now. Hurricane Heist. Don't sleep on Hurricane Heist.
Thank you so much. Please share your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcast. It does point people to the show. And as one listener suggested, maybe that's where we should start taking top 10 lists from now on. Just putting that out there.
Maybe. I don't know. Hi, this is from Brian. Hey, guys. I know you have a grudge against Orson Scott Card and his stance on gays. We do.
Yes.
We hate him. He's a terrible human being.
Yes.
Just keeping that clear. So I was wondering, what is your stance on Frank Herbert? Or more closely, the movie Dune by David Lynch, because I always found it very off-putting. Those Harkonnens being portrayed as some evil gays that hate ecology.
I have never seen David Lynch's Dune, nor have I ever read any of the books. So.
To me, those are some of the worst imagined villains, as if they were so lazy and just thought, why do people hate? What do people hate? Gays and polluters. That's fine. Let's meld these two things together and create villains.
Ew, gay polluters.
Listen, gay villains in films, I'm usually on their side. What was that one?
Team Mrs. Danvers.
For example, in the movie Obsessed with Beyonce and Idris Elba.
Uh-huh. Oh, the gossip gay.
The evil gossip gay in The Office. Unsung hero.
Pour your honeyed words into crazy. Who's the unhinged white woman in that movie?
Allie Larder.
Allie Larder in Allie Larder's ears.
Justin. Not sure if you guys are willing to read this on the podcast. Oh. In fear of losing Patreon subscribers.
What?
Oh. And possibly real life friends. What's going on?
I don't know. I'm at the edge of my seat.
But I found this old email I had written when the Linoleum Knife podcast was talking about dogs versus cats. When did we do that?
At some point, I think we talked about liking dogs more. Or I do, anyway.
Here are the reasons why dogs are better than cats. Oh, let's get into it.
He's throwing down.
All right, number one. Dogs can be trained to be service dogs. I've never heard of service cats, probably because it would lead to mass casualties among the impaired. Two, dogs can be drug and bomb sniffers. Cat urine, for comparison, contains ammonia, which leads to headache, dizziness, sore throat, lightheadedness, vomiting, nausea. No comparison. Three, cats cause mass casualties to the U.S. bird population. 3.7 billion killed annually, all because they enjoy the thrill. They don't even eat the birds. Number four, studies show the ability of trained dogs to detect melanoma by sniffing skin lesions. Cats, on the other hand, are a cancer on society. Five, dogs can detect prostate cancer by simply smelling patients' urine. Cats would be too uppity and snobbish to do this kind of work. Then he says cat people need to be put on an island, which is, come on now.
Well, he suggests Australia, which is a lovely place to visit.
Your loyal listener who enjoys stoking podcast listener pet riots, Justin. Well, Justin, I do not remember the conversation that we had about dogs versus cats, but I will, and whatever I said, I might be contradicting, right now, but I will say that I love them both. I know Alonzo hates cats.
Hate is strong. I just don't care for them. I've never found them, even before I was allergic to them, I never found them particularly cuddly or anything. Like, I've always grown up with dogs. I like dogs. Right.
I grew up with both.
If listeners want to respond to Justin's list with their own suggestions of why cats
might, rule and dogs drool,
for instance, you are more than welcome to do
which
so.
Which is an accurate thing. Cats, dogs do drool.
Dogs do drool, yes. You're welcome to send those to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We are open to both sides of this very delicate issue.
This is a very important topic. That must be ironed out.
Yes.
This beef must be squashed. or not. I love cats. I have two personal favorite cats that live in Austin, Texas that I got to see this weekend. And I took a whole gang of allergy drugs before walking in to the apartment. Because cats, you're kind of allergic to cats.
No, not yeah, I don't have, I'm not a patch on you.
I'm... go to the hospital allergic to cats. Yes. And so, but I love them. I love them so much. And these two friends have sphinxes, which are the freakiest looking cat ever. And they're so cool.
They're skin bags.
They have giant ears and they're weird and they rub all over you. And I love them so much. Now, in film, I'd say dogs usually take the prize. Because they're just more... cinematic, you know, they're better at, listen, dogs are better actors than cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
New Benji premieres on Netflix this week.
We'll give them that. Dogs are better actors than cats.
Yes.
Cats, not such good actors, but.
Yeah, just watch Day for Night.
You can train them. You can train a cat to be in a movie, but you always feel like you're watching like the best take that six cats tried to do. You know?
It's like Billy Wilder told Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis, you better be good every time, because whatever take Marilyn gets right, that's the one we're using.
Oh, that can't be true.
Apparently.
She was a pro.
She's a lot of things, but she was not a pro.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah. She famously, like, never knew her lines.
Is that real?
Was very insecure. Always brought an acting coach with her on the set. They would have to hide lines of dialogue in, like, the drawers and behind.
Shows what I know, then.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, then?
But the finished product was transcendent.
The finished product was transcendent. You just go watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Everybody. I know you have.
I'm a big fan of Marilyn Monroe. I'm not shading her at all, but I'm just saying, let's get real here. But, you know, would I have rather have seen Some Like It Hot with Mitzi Gaynor? No, I would not.
This is from Jeff. I meant to write this earlier when the two of you reviewed Faces Places on the podcast, but I forgot. Now that I've listened to Alonzo's review of the same film on What the Flick, where the claim is once again made that the only two remaining members of the Nouvelle Vague are Agnès Varda and Jean-Luc Godard, I'm reminded of these two little words, Luc Mouillé. I write this with some hesitation, knowing full well that by the time it is read on the podcast, things may be different. But I'm willing to risk it. Big fan of the show.
Monsieur Mouillé is still alive, as it turns out.
Yes.
Neither of us had ever heard of him.
Yeah, it's true. I had never heard of him.
His films did not make the splash in the U.S. that many of his Nouvelle Vague cohorts did, but he is indeed part of the Nouvelle Vague, and he is indeed alive, so apologies for getting that wrong.
And he is someone that I feel I need to go...
Catch up on,
investigate, because I just... When I heard the name the first time, we read this letter privately a few days ago, and I went and looked him up. Mouillé's films are known for their humor, anti-authoritarian leanings, and rigorously primitive aesthetic, which is heavily influenced by his love of American B-movies. Such influential filmmakers and critics as Godard, Jean-Marie Strobe, Jacques Rivette, and critic Jonathan Rosenbaum have consistently praised his work. He has never found commercial success, even in France.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you know what that means?
Too weird for the room.
I got to go look at his films. And I did not know he existed.
Yeah, me either.
So.
Shows you what we know.
Thank you, Jeff, for correcting us. And thank you for teaching me a thing. Because now I'm very excited. Anytime I find up something new that I didn't know about, I get real stoked.
Anybody who gets a thumbs up from Strobe and Rosenbaum, you're all over it.
Yeah. Well, that's just right thinking. All right, that's it.
Golly. All right. Well, hey, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And again, our Patreon page is at patreon.com/linoleumknife, where you get extra shows like LKTV, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, and the ever controversial Linoleum Nights. And
never controversial Linoleum Nights.
We try, but it's, not
never really controversial. It's not really the only thing.
That's the one where we swear.
That's the one where we get to say anything we want.
Yes.
So it's like our favorite F word and then our other favorite F word.
Anyway, in the meantime, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out our friends Bibbs and Whitney on Cancel Too Soon and on their newer podcast, Critically Acclaimed. It's part of the Schmoes Know Network. And hey, check out the Schmoes Know while you're there. Dennis, anyone?
I love that they're on the Schmoes Network now. I always believed in them.
I'm glad that they found a new home after after their previous one went away. So it's good to have them still on the airwaves. Check out Dennis. Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon, The Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Film Spotting SVU, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can our person that we read today, leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe to the show for free there. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio, thelounge.com, Spotify, Podbean, CastBox, Podable. Anyway, there's a million of them.
Right.
But we're pretty much in all the places where the podcasts live, so you can go find us there. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Go visit bluetopia.com, BLEUtopia.com, to find out more about all of his great projects. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. With questions or comments. It's always lovely to hear from you and lovely that you're listening to us. We'll catch you next time. So until then,
goodbye.